Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. You just saw on the screen the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm, otherwise known as Statler to my Waldorf, or maybe Waldorf to my Statler.
I don't know. Yeah, which one is?
I've never figured out which one's which.
I haven't either. I mean, the one of them is bald, though, so that might be a key indicator.
I would be the bald guy, and Andrew would be the guy with the big mustache and the fluffy hair there.
So yeah, that's right. Either way, it works for all these years.
Well, it does, and it continues on. We are going to maybe have a little bit of a shorter one today, but we're going to talk about a couple things going on here. First off, I got to ask you this. I was very amused when one of the first things that popped up when there was this news that Netflix was going to make an offer or had made an offer to buy Warner Discovery, right? And it's only part of Warner Discovery. It's most of Warner Discovery, but their CNN wasn't part of that. And over at Puck, Dylan Byers writes that there was a great sigh of relief that Barry Weiss was not going to be in charge of CNN because Netflix beat Paramount to the punch. That was on Friday. On Monday morning, Paramount launches a hostile bid to take over all of Warner, including CNN. And I just don't think, Andrew, is there enough popcorn in the world for this thing? I mean, you tell me.
No, not enough. Not enough. I love popcorn, too. But, I hope, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but I hope this is the beginning of not necessarily a rebalancing of what was the mainstream media. It's not mainstream so much anymore, but we got the big changes at Paramount and CBS, and now this potential one. And then, of course, the Washington Post is going through some convulsions, and the LA Times seems to be moving in a different direction in some ways. So there is some hope that eventually the forces of the new media will force a rebalancing in the wacko mainstream.
Well, I got to say this. I haven't seen the Los Angeles Times necessarily do that very well. I think they got, because they were forced to during the wildfire crisis, right? The catastrophe in Los Angeles. They were sort of forced to because it was clear that government there was so incompetent, maliciously incompetent and absent, that they didn't have much choice but to report it. I'm not sure, because I don't read it a lot.
No.
How much that has improved. However, I will tell you this, because this was interesting to me this morning. I don't know if you saw the Washington Post report about Texas Democrats. Did you happen to catch that?
No.
So the headline was Dems in Disarray in Texas. And I actually thought just the headline was an improvement over the way the Washington Post would normally spin this whole thing with. Because, I mean, the Democrats are eating themselves trying to play musical chairs with this redistricted map. And now, call it Allred wants to go back into the House, and he's going to primary the person who replaced him in the House. And again, there's not enough popcorn in the world, and I'm in Texas, so I get to really enjoy this. And Jasmine Crockett is going to run for the Senate seat. And, you know, I don't know what I expected. You know, I get I'm still a subscriber to the Washington Post, and I was going to cancel it. Now I'm kind of thinking I might keep it just to see how things are going along. So, you know, you get these morning briefing type things, right?
Right.
And this is actually what it's called. It's called the morning brief. And I get this thing. It says Dems in Disarray in Texas. So I'm thinking, okay, well, this is interesting. I wonder how long it takes to get to Republicans seizing or Republicans pouncing, or how they mention that Republicans are actually the problem. I was almost sort of thinking that Jasmine Crockett would get portrayed as a breath of fresh air. And Andrew, I have to tell you, I was absolutely shocked at the way the Washington Post covered it. They actually covered it correctly. There wasn't a pounce or a seize. There was not a pounce or a seize by Republicans in this entire article. And it didn't even mention redistricting, except for the fact that it was a redistricted map. And so all the lines changed. And that's it. There was no editorial judgment being, you know,
layered in. Well, yeah, that is encouraging. I know that they have the convulsions on the editorial page, and I think there's a reorganization or redirection going on in the LA Times editorial, which I haven't read it either, but I've heard there have been some contacts with some people I know about writing for them, which you wouldn't expect. So hopefully there's something subterranean going on there these days.
I haven't heard anything. Nobody's reached out to me to write for them. Just to underscore this.
In case anybody's
asking, I have not signed up for the cocktail hour in the swamp. But to be fair, I haven't signed up for it because nobody's invited me to sign up for it.
Right.
But yeah, I've heard the same thing. And I think that's largely fair. They brought in, I forget the guy's name, but he's actually looking to add actual conservatives, not the Jen Rubin type of house conservative voice, just absolutely nuts. They're looking for people who can speak across the spectrum. I'm fine with that, right?
Yeah, of course.
I don't have any problem with that at all. And they used to have that with Hugh Hewitt until Jonathan Capehart insulted him during a podcast. And Hugh walked off and said, "That's it, I'm done." And, you know, and that was really the last conservative voice I was interested in at the Washington Post. And since then, they brought other people in. I haven't paid a lot of attention to that, but their reporting has actually been pretty good.
Yeah.
CBS News had a article today, and actually I've seen other things from CBS that make me feel like that Barry Weiss is actually making some changes there. And an article today about Turning Point USA, right? This is Charlie Kirk's organization. His wife is now running it. His widow's now running it. And apparently people have been spreading rumors that there were donors that were complaining about how the money was being handled and that there was the IRS was investigating and stuff like that. And CBS actually ran a piece today saying that they had looked into this, and the IRS is saying nobody's investigating Turning Point USA. Their books are clean. And they ran it. They had a breaking news headline on it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
I mean, Andrew, we might not have much to talk about if the Protection Racket Media starts.
Somehow I think we'll be able to dig something up. Yeah.
You think we'll be able to slog through a podcast every week? It's interesting. Last week,
this was part of my column on Sunday. Last week, when the Washington Post ran this, I guess you could call it a partial account of the first boat bombing, a day or so later, the New York Times ran the full account and basically lambasted the Washington Post. So competition took hold there, and they got a spanking. I'm not sure how many people saw the change, but that's encouraging.
I think we wrote about it. I didn't write about it, but I think one of the people here at Hot Air wrote about it. It may have been John that wrote about it. But yeah, I mean, that's the New York Times. I'm extremely skeptical that the New York Times is going to turn that ship around. Because ownership hasn't changed, and the ownership's direction hasn't changed. You know, you talked about the Los Angeles Times. Well, you got Patrick Soon-Shiong, who is saying he wants the Times to start speaking to everybody and not just the elite left. Jeff Bezos brought in Will Lewis to turn that around. And I got to say, I think that there's been a huge investment in that, because they've kicked a hell of a lot of people out of that organization.
Yeah.
Told them take a buyout and leave if you're not going to be part of our new direction. People did, and they haven't, I mean, it hasn't bothered them much, right?
They're hurting on online subscriptions, and they got devastated over the last few years. I think they lost like almost a million. But it's tumultuous, and as it should be, if there's going to be change, Bezos gets resistance, Lewis gets resistance, and it takes time to to right the ship and turn it and get the crew members you trust.
Well, and again, you did cover this in your Sunday column. New dangers emerge from media selective coverage of drug boat attacks. And, you know, the dangers that emerge from this is that, you know, being misinformed about what's actually going on leads to potential consequences in terms of policy, in terms of security, right? We're talking about
war on drugs. Yeah.
Well, and elections too. I mean, we don't have any special elections coming up in the near future, which is good.
No, we have the midterms though. And if people, I know they're annoyed at Trump for other reasons, but if people take that Washington Post account, which was then trumpeted by other media, and they don't counter it, they're not conscientious, and not everybody has time to triangulate and find out the full account from somebody else, then they're making a decision next fall on, like you said, false information. And that's dangerous. You don't have to agree with the policies, but you ought to make, what's the word, conscientious decisions that are based on accurate information. And
right,
we don't often have that. We have pieces of information. People take that and they run with it as if that's the whole truth, like the Washington Post story last week on the boat bombing. It wasn't the truth.
Yeah, it was. I mean, this is the whole sources say, right? And
people two unidentified sources who ask for anonymity because they're speaking about sensitive issues. Just two. There was one quote, and then the New York Times came in with five sources, four reporters, and five sources saying that no, Hegseth did not give the order to kill everybody. And there were other things that the Washington Post got wrong. So it's good that it happened. I wish it would happen more often, but it's a hopeful sign.
Yeah. And I mean, we certainly talk about the reliability of sources. And this is one of the things that, you know, we talk about anonymous sources. This is actually one of those situations where you might consider the use of a confidential source to be somewhat reasonable, because this is some, you know, it involves national security type of situations, and it could be that type of thing. There's a bunch of stuff that people use. I mean, everybody uses anonymous sources now for stuff that really, you know, like gossipy type stuff, you know, what the strategy is going to be for next, you know, for the next week's messaging or something like that. Why would you need an anonymous source for that, right?
Exactly. And in the first term, Trump got crucified often by, he called it deep state, but by anonymous sources. They pick out a reporter, like Ben Rhodes says, young reporters are easy to play. They pick out a reporter, they leak him something that may not even be true. He runs with it because it's exciting, makes him look like a really good reporter. And then Trump has to argue with it, or Trump's people, and it creates that whole false image about what's going on. And the deep state just kept pecking at Trump time after time. And a lot of the times it wasn't true, or it was only partially true. And they would peck away. That's how they got rid of Tillerson in the cabinet, pecking away with bad things about him. So as a reporter, you have to be, as you said, you have to be judicious, you have to be honest. Otherwise, you're just going to get played by the policy people.
Well, yeah. And look, I mean, this is the type of thing that, again, the type of topic that you might want to say, okay, this is sort of serious. And in order to get the truth out, you might have to talk to people while protecting their identities. That much I don't mind so much, but you have to also be careful, or maybe you have to be ethical about how you choose those sources. Because what it really looked like with the Washington Post is they got a couple of people at the Pentagon who were sore at Pete Hegseth for reshuffling things and reshuffling the priorities and stuff like that. They got part of the story. They basically rang up two sources, didn't go looking around for more sources to see if they got the full story, and ran with what they were basically handed. And this is the problem, like you said, when you're dealing with young reporters. This is part of the issue. I would also argue that what it really is they're being told stuff that they want to hear. And that all they're trying to do is say, well, I found two sources that say the same thing. I'm going to run with this because this is a story I wanted to write in the first place.
That's right. It's too good to check.
Too good to check. Yes. It's too fun to check. It's too good to check. I use that all the time because it's kind of just a good way of, sort of labeling this stuff. That some stories are too good to check. And that's when you really have to be careful.
Honest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just have to be careful because that's where you're going to get tripped up, because you're basically listening to people who are confirming your own worldview. And if you care about the truth, that's a problem. Now, if you don't care about the truth and all you're really interested in doing is narrative amplification, well, then you don't need to worry about it. But the Washington Post seems, at least these days, not to be as into that type of amplification service anymore. It looks like they're trying to get more credible or build their credibility up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a highlight of the problem. There are some dim encouraging signs, and I guess we have to go with that. But it's an old problem, the unidentified sources. Yeah. And a long time ago, when I was working for the New York Times, you had to, if you were going to use an unidentified source, you had to use an explanation. You couldn't just say an unidentified source. You had to say a source like the Washington Post who sought anonymity because speaking confidential affairs or something. And now that's become boilerplate, and you just throw that in as an excuse. So you could, if you were cynical, and some days I am, you could say, I wonder if there really were two. I wonder if they really said that. This is the problem with the media. They've done so much making up, or in many cases ignoring, like the Hunter laptop.
Right.
And they just, it's sad. But anyway, I wanted to write about it, at least on that one, to kind of expose a hopeful sign of competition kicking in.
Well, yeah, I certainly hope so. And I mean, I guess we'll see. But just to get back to your article here, I mean, well, we kind of discussed this. I want to talk about real quickly here, because I know we're kind of just a little under time pressure here. But I want to talk about your Thursday thing, too, because I think this is important, because we're seeing more and more of this. There was an arrest made today of brothers, I guess, that were threatening Homeland Security officials. They arrested them for terroristic threats. They were trying to get people to shoot ICE officers as well. It was pretty bad. And your column, or this may be, I think, your 5-minute podcast, these calls for violence keep coming from one side of the political aisle. Tell us a little bit about your perspective on that, because that's the way I see it, too.
Well, you know, it starts, and the most obvious thing is that calling Trump a Nazi all the time or a fascist. If you're weak-minded, that could suggest, like some potential assassins, that you could really help out if you did something. And Jim Garrity has written about this, and the lack of officialdom not really coming out against extreme language. And both sides have done it, but the left, it's just chronic with them. This Trump derangement syndrome has taken over their mind, and it's polluted so many things. And Hakeem Jeffries calling for take to the streets and posing for the camera holding a baseball bat. You know, come on. This is supposed to be the head Democrat in the House, and it's just, it's distasteful. It's also scary, and you know, I guess maybe we never know what the motivation was for the Butler shooter, they just need to be careful. The people, public figures need to be more careful and not get carried away with their opposition, because the left and the party, the Democrat Party, is not donating because they say they're not being hard enough on Trump. Well, being hard on somebody isn't saying they're a fascist. You know, you come up with alternative ideas, you criticize the substance of programs. They said, but name calling. Remember grade school, at least when I was in grade school, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And I mean, that's just so juvenile.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's juvenile. And I think it has to do a lot with the idea of, you know, this is sort of my philosophy on this, is that the problem is that government is just doing too much. And it's too much a part of people's lives. And that's the reason why politics has become a religion. And that's the reason why people just get so brittle about this. Yeah. And brittle, I think, is the right word. People just get brittle about this.
That's a great word. Yeah. And the religion part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, I mean,
that's why we need you as Pope, Ed, I think.
Well, I don't know if I could be. I don't know if I could be Pope. I'm not sure I could be Pope.
It's easier to live with a Chicago White Sox fan than it is a Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
Hey! Pittsburgh Steelers are having problems this year, and I know that you're delighted about. I know you're delighted about that.
Can't have enough for my mind, because I got so many on my side of the Browns.
I know darn well that you are that you are just happy as all get out. The Pittsburgh Steelers are having their issues. What are they, 6-6?
I guess, man.
I guess what I would say is that the Aaron Rodgers era has not exactly been the super I know we'll finish up with this really quickly. Mike Tomlin has been there an awfully long time. Yes, it's been an awfully long time since they've actually really fielded a good solid season under Mike Tomlin.
And, it's in hockey, they change coaches because the point is sometimes the team collectively stops listening to the coach. They've heard him say the same thing too often, and they just don't get motivated by those words. And how many years? It's what, 13 years or something? It's the longest.
No, it's like 18 years, isn't it? I'm trying to remember when I don't know. It's been something like 17, 18 years. He's been there an awfully long time. I could be wrong about that, but I think it's, he was a young guy. He was in his 30s. When he took over that coaching job, and he's in his mid 50s now. So it's.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say, but it's been a while.
Just say 6-6. That's enough.
Yeah. Was, 6-6.
What are the Browns? Are what, 3-11 or something awful?
Well, I mean, and look at the Chiefs.
The Chiefs are
stinking.
This has become my alternative to watch fun team. Well, Mahomes is still good. They're just not winning. Mahomes and Kelsey, that's a magic duo. You know, when you see, they both know what the other's going to do. And, you know, they haven't won. You're absolutely right. But watching really good players do their thing is really satisfying. But like watching Drew Brees or Joe Montana. I just love that.
I love watching talent. I do. I'm not as much into football as I used to be, but I do like watching talent. I do like watching fun games. That's the reason why I haven't watched too many Steelers games this year. All right. We got to get to at least a joke of the week. I know that you don't have one today, but I got one for you.
Okay. So,
all right. An American, a Russian, and Italian are captured by hostile forces behind the lines. And they're being held as spies. And the guards come for the American first. They bind his hands, bind his feet, drag him off. And the other two hear his screams for an hour. Then nothing. They don't hear anything. Another hour, the guards drag him back in, cut his ties on his hands and his feet, and drop him on a bunk. The American is shaking his head. He says, "All my training was for nothing. I told them everything." Then they take the Russian and bind his hands and feet and drag him. And they go at him for a couple of hours. And he's screaming and yelling. And finally, he gets quiet again. About an hour later, they drag the Russian back in. And he says, "Look, it was horrible, but in the end, they broke me. I couldn't resist them any longer. I told them everything." So then the guards come in for the Italian. They bind his hands, his feet, and drag him off. And he's gone all day. And they're hearing the screams all day. On and on and on. And after what seems like forever, they drag him back in, throw him on the bunk, cut the bonds on him, and leave. And the Russian looks at him and says, "You must be the toughest man on earth." And the American looks at him and goes, "How did you not break?" And the Italian says, "I wanted to do. I tried to tell them everything, but they wouldn't cut my hands loose."
Oh, I didn't expect that. I didn't know where that was going.
As part of Italian, I know what they're talking about. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Okay. That's my joke for the week from jokesoftheweek.net. As I love jokesoftheweek.net. It's always great fun to go over there and take a look at that. Also great fun talking to Andrew Malcolm each and every week right here at hotair.com. Go read him at redstate.com. He is the regent of redstate.com and the prince of Twitter. We'll do this again next week, Andrew. So we'll see you then.
Yeah, let's do that. I'll see you. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Andrew.